Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.
Q is about conversation.
If we're really concerned about ending poverty, we've got to be more concerned about creating justice.
Our cultural products as Christians need to both defy and resonate with the culture.
And God's doing amazing things. His church is expanding. His church is growing.
It's not what's the purpose of my life. It's what is the purpose that's been assigned.
Stay curious. Think well. Advance good. This is Q.
Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons. I'm Paul Perreault from Faith Radio. We partner with Q to bring you these radio shows every week. Today, we have an interesting show where we are featuring two of the talks from this past spring's Q conference in Nashville. Q is about asking questions and listening. And some of those questions can be a bit unsettling. While we may want to run from those tough questions, they also can be a great opportunity to lean in and engage our world. Gabe set up the first segment for us as we listen to an honest conversation between two very interesting people.
One is David Bazan. Now, David Bazan, some of you maybe have heard of the indie band Pedro the Lion. This was a group that he was a part of, the songwriter, the driving force behind that. Rapid success in the culture. I mean, this was a band that people appreciated. They loved them. They were one of those first kind of indie format bands that just took the world by storm. But then he's sitting with his friend, a guy named David Dark, who I consider David just a great philosopher. He's somebody who's written so many good books about pop culture, about faith, about how do we think about this idea of American life and culture and also truth that starts to spring forward in it. So follow me here. I think when we look at the culture around, we see truth. I mean, Chuck Colson early on was one of the great influences in my life. And I remember first understanding this idea of common grace that he described. And the idea of common grace was essentially the grace that God gives to all of us and all of creation, whether you follow Jesus or not. But common grace kind of holds back the elements of the fall or sin or brokenness that would otherwise overwhelm creation. And so you see grace come out in works of beauty and art and architecture and science and music and all these beautiful spaces. And you say, well, how did that happen? Because the person who created that art, maybe they don't say that they're a Christian, but yet what they created was beautiful. Well, you would categorize that as the common grace that all human beings have because they're made in the image of God. So then as we're listening to music, as we're looking at film, as we're looking at art, as we're appreciating the world around us, do we have the discernment to see truth coming out? Do we see people who otherwise would never subscribe to Christianity, but yet laying out these amazing Christian ideas and principles and words of Jesus? Well, this conversation is going to be an exercise in that. You're going to get to sort of challenge yourself to say, can I see that in this conversation? Can I understand how a philosopher, David Dark, is having a conversation with David Bazan, this artist who expresses a lot of truth in the music that he writes? Even if he wouldn't say any of that, has this Christian underpinning, David Dark's able to see some of that through it. He's the author of a book called Life's Too Short to Pretend You're Not Religious, The Sacredness of Questioning Everything, another book that he wrote, which I love because Q's all about questions. Then he wrote a book called The Gospel According to America, a meditation on a God-blessed, Christ-haunted idea. So his works appeared in MTV News, Books and Culture, Pitchfork, The Oxford American. And he's also doing something fascinating right now. He teaches at the Tennessee Prison for Women, and he also teaches at Belmont University. Now you know who's going to be in this conversation. How can you start to see common grace playing out in the music you're listening to, in the pop culture experiences that you have, wherever it is? How can we have that kind of lens to see that? And just sit back and enjoy a wonderful conversation that we titled Unsettling Questions.
Dave first appeared within the public mind, perhaps, under the moniker / brand of Pedro the Lion. And then an exceptional, well, there was a moment when you were operating under paperback, and I still have a paperback t-shirt. But after paperback, another one called Headphones, but now just Dave Bazan. Curse Your Branches is the most recent one, and Hard to Be came off of Curse Your Branches. And the latest, Strange Negotiations.
Yep.
And it's on NPR, what do you call it?
There's a song on all songs considered Wolves at the Door, yeah.
Okay, Wolves at the Door. And maybe, who's heard Curse Your Branches? If you raise your hand if you're familiar with this work. Okay, there's some people. Something that was said earlier today brought to mind some of the process of Curse Your Branches. So I'm going to mention that and then invite you to talk about the process. Mm-hmm. It was mentioned earlier today by Kevin Kelly that the proper response to a bad idea is a better idea. That when somebody has a bad idea, and I'm thinking here primarily a bad idea about God, that our response shouldn't be stop thinking, but should be think more, better ideas. That brought to mind something Fred Friendly said. Fred Friendly was Edward R. Murrow's right-hand guy. And Fred Friendly famously said that the job of a newsman, but we could say minstrel, storyteller, artist, is to create a pain in the audience's mind that can only be relieved by thinking. Talk a bit about the process of Curse Your Branches as these songs, Hard to Be being the first song on the album, emerged.
So we were talking about earlier today how I think that the history of my growing up in evangelical Christianity was a series of imaginings of the character of God. That at some point early on, somebody said, this is what God is like. Can you imagine that? You know, I responded, yes, I can. I was three or whatever, however old I was. And over the course of my church experience, it was always a revised, like, reimagining of, you know, somebody would say, have you been thinking of God in this way? And we would all go, yeah. And they go, that's the wrong way to think about God. You need to start thinking about God in this way. And so by the time I was 22 or 23, I was pretty satisfied that I was imagining the best God possible. And later in my 20s, I started to think really hard about some of the assumptions that I had made about that character and realized that I didn't like him at all. So I didn't decide anything. I just started writing songs as I do. And then all of these things started coming out and I realized, oh man, like I'm taking on, you know, capital G-O-D. And then by the time I got through with the record, I realized, no, I'm just, that's the myth of a powerful movement like American Evangelical Christianity, that there is one way to think about a thing, that the interpretation that is universal, that seems universal is the real thing. And so in the end, I realized that I was making a record that was kind of challenging nothing more than an institution. Institutions don't like to be challenged.
Though. Yes, yes. I know that in our back and forth, I quoted Leonard Cohen to you. I think it's in Democracy is Coming to the USA. He says, I'm the little Jew who wrote the Bible. And to that, it seemed to me that Cohen is observing, noting that he himself is part of a continuum, part of a tradition of crying out loud, a kind of back and forth dialectic of you've heard it said, but I say unto you, once this, now this. I noted, especially with Curse Your Branches, many of those songs that it seemed to me that the more you shake your fist at bad conceptions of God, the more biblical you're being. Because as I read it, the Bible is, and this is Eugene Peterson line, is relentlessly narratival, relentlessly lyrical, always pushing further toward fresher interpretations of the living word. Biblical imagination is a phrase that probably, I guess a couple of weeks ago when you were in Nashville, I dropped that one your way, and you responded somewhat surprisingly favorably to it.
My imagination, the times that I exercised it most growing up until I was 25, was in a biblical context that turn the other cheek, love your enemy, that these things required great imagination. These were the tasks that I used my imagination for most often growing up. And if my imagination is functional, it's because I spent so much time chewing on these ideas, these biblical notions, as distorted as they may or may not have been in my upbringing.
And by mentioning the Sermon on the Mount, you seem to imply that you feel an ethical summons, if you like, to a kind of faithfulness to the ethic, the politics exemplified by Jesus of Nazareth.
I find myself participating with evangelical Christians, even though I myself am, I guess, a non-practicing evangelical.
Well, I think if more for modesty's sake, I think evangelical and Christian should probably be a public verdict.
Not a self-description.
Rather than a self-description.
Yeah.
So, sorry to interrupt.
Well, and that brings up an excellent point that Gillian Welch says over and over in a song, that time is the revelator. People are very fond of proclaiming the category that they would like themselves to be in or confess, but time is in fact the revelator.
Time will demonstrate. The proof is in the pudding.
Yeah.
With that, you talk about reserving judgment on your own identity,
yeah.
which I think relates to this, and the danger when we start insisting on beliefs that we claim to have, preceding any public discernment of a particular practice, we end up being people who are committed to nothing much more than the rigorous defense of our own personalities.
Yeah.
An hour ago, we were talking about the Philippians passage in which, actually an old hymn, Jesus did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a servant, slave. That self-emptying seems very in keeping, and it can be linked up with the tradition of negative theology in which Meister Eckhart, for instance, says, God, rid me of God. The prayer, very related to this, deliver me from these crazy conceptions that are death-dealing in the way they make me look at people.
I think this all started, you were asking about the Sermon on the Mount and whatever, and I find myself interacting with people that we have different worldviews, but I'm trying to find common ground, and I say, when you say God's kingdom, what do you think about? And they say, oh, well, justice and these things, and I was like, that, me too. I think that's important too. Let's join together and do that. Because partially you're scared of burning in hell for all eternity. Me, just because I think it's a great idea. But let's do it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that time is the revelator, the proof's in the pudding, the fruit on the tree. That's the thing.
Another Leonard Cohen line that relates to the idea of the verdict of Christianity. Someone described Cohen as a poet, and he said, well, thank you, but poetry isn't a choice, it's a verdict.
Right.
And poetry as a term of affirmation, poetry is the news that stays news. The classic is that which never stops saying what it has to say. And the idea of the prophetic. Somebody asked Allen Ginsberg, how do you become a prophet? And he said, tell your secrets.
And you give up so much by doing that. You give up credibility with people. Give up credibility today because it's the way forward. You're not credible. You're full of contradictions. You
just
must
want to, everybody needs to write that down. Give up credibility.
It's the only way forward because it's power. We're all trying to get power over other people, and that's all your credibility is. Is when you say something, you want people to listen. I know you think I'm weird. Credibility, it's you trying to have power over other people. And if you believe in what Jesus said, which I almost do, you can't be trying to collect power over other people. It's not what he was trying to have you do.
Okay. Witness, an operative term that Dave and I often bandy about, a very helpful term, witness, because I don't think we can ever speak of our witness as something that we are now about to bring to our 9-to-5, or witness as something that I have yet to apply to certain relationships. Too late.
You've already done it.
You've already done it. Your witness, show me your receipts, a transcript of everything you've texted, all of your emails, everything you've said in one day, your gas mileage, I'll show you your witness.
That last question was definitely unsettling, but honestly, one we need to ask. Conversations and talks like these are not only heard during the Q Conference every spring, but also every fall during the Q Commons events, which are held throughout the United States and the world in various cities. You can find out more about these. The one coming up this October is October 26th. Find out more at qcommons.com. As a matter of fact, if your church is interested in actually hosting a Q Commons event, we'd love to help you out in that regard. Find out more at qcommons.com. Well, let's quickly transition to another talk that was equally difficult, but again, important to lean into and consider. Gabe, introduce it for us.
You're going to get to hear the talk that was ranked the number one talk at Q 2017. So over 40 talks took place, and we always ask our participants to, at the end of the event, rank the ones that most challenged them and also that were just their favorite, that really stirred them to think in a new way. And this was it. It's by a man who goes by the name Propaganda. His real name is Jason Petty. But Propaganda is kind of his stage name. He's known as Propaganda, who's really a prophetic artist who doesn't mind going after so many of the topics and issues that many of us maybe get uncomfortable hearing about, but we need to hear about it. I mean, and isn't that what prophets do? They tell us the things that we need to hear, but maybe we weren't ready to hear. And when we're not ready to hear it, sometimes it kind of hits us in the face. It makes us stop. It makes us stand up and go, wait, I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know if I like that. But you can't walk away from it and go, I didn't just hear something that wasn't true. I mean, you heard the truth and it moves you. And so I think as you hear this talk from Propaganda, it's called intersectional. You're going to hear about the world as we know it right now, but what is the future beyond it? I mean, so much of our discussions today in our culture have been around diversity, around race, around how do we get along with all of these differences, no matter what that difference is. And we have so many children growing up in a world where we're wanting to identify with who we've developed an identity around. You know, over 60 plus identities on Facebook as options for children to choose as to who they are. In a world that's starting to do that, so we're all individuals, you're finding a world that's starting to break apart a bit at the seams where we don't understand what draws us together. We don't know what brings unity or if that's even possible anymore. And Propaganda speaks right to that. He comes in and just says, look, here is the world as we know it, but here's where we have to go. This is the next stage of this conversation. And as the church, that's the thing I get excited about. How do we lead the way forward? Not just constantly respond and react and acknowledge where we've been wrong, but constantly have nothing to offer. Propaganda saying, look, we have something to offer. Let's lead. And here's how we can think well about that. And so let's just listen in to this powerful talk for 9 minutes from Propaganda.
I want to present to you a concept called intersectionality. But before I do that, Kendrick Lamar last week released an album, his fourth major label release that probably sealed him as the greatest rapper of his generation. Now, not every generation, but of his generation. But that's not the interesting part of this story to me. The interesting part is the subplot that's happening. And the subplot that's happening is something that made him find himself finding something very seriously in common with an unlikely person. That person would be President Donald Trump. What does Kendrick Lamar and Donald Trump have in common? It's complicated. Intersectionality was first coined by Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw. She's the expert in something called critical race theory. And its textbook definition would be like, this is the study of how overlapping or intersecting social identities, particularly minority identities, relate to systems and structures of oppression, domination, or discrimination. Now, let me try to put some skin on that. In case you haven't noticed, I'm black. But I'm also a father of two girls, pray for me. I see, sometimes when I'm with my daughters, I see people say, hey, man, your daughters are gorgeous. You're in trouble, man. You better get yourself a gun. Hey, how about you raise your sons to respect women, huh? How about that? They don't have to kill nobody. Patriarchy much? So I'm a husband, I'm a father, but I'm also the son. I'm the son of a woman, duh. But I'm the son of specifically a black woman, right? Who got her rights in the 1960s. But if history tells me what I thought it told me, I thought the women's suffrage movement happened decades before that. But because if you understand history, the women's suffrage movement wasn't for women. It was for white women, which is why a couple hundred years later when we had our Women's March at the beginning of this year, where all kinds of people from all walks of life was flooding our streets, there was some problematic moments in there because a lot of these women were saying, yo, where were y'all when us undocumented women were getting our children snatched from us? Where were y'all when our sons were washing up on the shore in the Middle East? Where were y'all when black women were weeping, watching their sons being murdered in the street? When you don't understand your intersections, things can get very messy. So what does Kendrick Lamar and Donald Trump have in common? They introduced something that existed in the fringes. They brought it to the pop culture. What Kendrick Lamar did on his album, he introduced a street religion, if you will, called the Black Hebrew Israelites. Now, I know most of y'all don't know what that is, but what it is this. It's this concept that was kind of birthed out of a need to sort of affirm a black narrative. The crux of it is the belief that blacks, Latinos, and Native Americans are actually the true Israelites. We're the true children of Israel. And the suffering that we're going through is because, according to Deuteronomy, we walked away from God's precepts. So until we start following the Ten Commandments, we're going to keep seeing the suffering that we're seeing. That's the Black Hebrew Israelites. And in some senses, there's a lot of problems with that. In other senses, I understand. If you don't see your narrative being affirmed within the church for which you exist in, you're going to try to find a way to affirm your narrative. Because nothing wrong with the book, but whatever y'all are doing, don't say what that's saying, right? Was kind of what was happening there, right? And of course, there's some other problematic things, especially if you start parsing out the difference between a Mesoamerican and a Native American. That means you bought the narrative of the colonizer who drew a border in between Texas and Mexico. That's just who bought this. They're the same people. So there's that problem, right? Ultimately, what we're talking about is a way to take black and make it an identity. Now, what did Donald Trump do? Well, he kind of did the same thing. He just did it with nationalism. He stood on the stage and he said, look, either we're a nation or we're not a nation. Either we got a border or we ain't got borders. Either we take care of their kids or we're taking care of our kids. Which one you want, right? Which was essentially what he was saying. And the alt-right was like, you know what? You are absolutely correct. Either we're people or we're not a people. What is American? They knew what their subtext was, because the subtext says, for me to understand what American is, I have to understand where America came from. And what they're saying is, our European ancestors came here to create a world for them, by them, right? Clearly, if you understand the trajectory of the next 300 years, they ain't have inclusiveness in mind. They knew exactly who they was building this world for. Oh, they got quiet on me again. They knew exactly who they were making this world for. So when they say, hey, so when somebody says, hey, we're a nation of immigrants, they go, I call BS. And you know what? They're right. This nation was meant for their own people. That's why we've been fighting for the last 300 years to try to get included. Right? The only problem with their definition of white is it's too broad, according to their ancestors, because they wasn't talking about white people. They was like, no, specifically this part of the UK. Even the Irish, for crying out loud, you're on the same landmass. It's just the northern part of your island. What's wrong with you? Right? So anyway. So, but it created this concept of whiteness. And now whiteness has an identity. And the second something has an identity, now it has to have agency. But how do we move from an identity to being intersectional? That means we have to understand what intersectional says. What intersectional says is this. Now, if you're the believer, what it says is this. It says that every time I take communion, I'm reminded that I was once undocumented too. What it says is this. What it says is this. I sit in Southern California, the best state in the world. You could sue me. I don't care. I sit in Long Beach, California, and I look at Standing Rock and I say, you know what? I am suffering and crushed under the same systemic pressures and oppression that created that system. And I also benefit from it because I know I'm standing on Native American soil. I look at the same misogyny and patriarchy that my PhD wife, my wife's a doctor. She still gets emails saying, hey, Alma, I was wondering about, I'm like, time out. Dr. Zaragoza Petty. Don't call my wife Alma. You understand what I'm saying? It's patriarchy. You understand what I'm saying? I understand that I am crushed under that same system because that same system set up the white supremacy that I'm still trying to fight. However, I still benefit from that system from my maleness. It's intersectional. Now, how do I move from intersectional to ally, which is what I believe we're actually called to? How do I move from intersectional to ally and then to advocate? Well, I got three suggestions for y'all, and I got a minute and a half to give it to you. One thing is, I got to throw out the concept of us versus them. That they the problem, because they is us. We talk about culture like it's just this thing up in the mountains. Like it's us, right? We have to throw that idea. We have to throw out the idea that we are the sole purveyors of suffering. And don't nobody else suffer like I suffer. So I can't go march for those folk because, you know, Black Lives Matter. They do matter. But if I understand that the same systems set their problem up, then what I can do is I don't have to be the sole purveyor of suffering. Because when I do that, when I stand on my own island and I say I'm the only one that got problems, what it does is it undermines all of our works of justice. I need to understand that if they free, I'm free. I need to also understand that I'm not also the sole provider of solutions. Meaning, if you raising money for your thing, that don't mean it's a zero-sum total game. Just because you working in sex trafficking don't mean I'm not working in the school-to-prison pipeline. We working on the same things. It's intersectional. I need to resist the temptation to believe that my cause is the only cause. And then finally, I need to understand that unity is not uniformity. We're not called to sameness. We're called to oneness. You move from understanding your intersections to becoming an ally. Thank you, guys.
Well, I don't know what you're feeling right now, but in the room at Q, there was a general sense of people just standing up, clapping. This is truth. I just heard something I needed to hear. And I hope that's what it does for you today. I hope it just makes you think. I mean, it's only 9 minutes, right? But so challenging, so important for us to try to recognize the differences in the world. But what is it that brings us together? How is it that the image of God and being image bearers means that there's a connectedness here and there's a way forward in this? There's some beauty in all of the struggle that's happening. If we can just have a vision to see it, and as people of faith, we have to be the ones to see it. We have to be those who insist on human dignity, who see a way forward, and who bring others into that vision, that you'll now just have a little bit of a different view and perspective on how difference can make us stronger and all of the opportunities that exist now for us to be part of renewing and reunifying those who for so long have just felt completely disconnected. You can also watch this talk at qideas.org. And until next time, I hope you have an incredible week. Join us at qideas.org, and we'll continue learning, dialoguing, and stirring the pot on really important conversations. This show is made possible in partnership with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.
Thank you for listening to the Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thank you for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.